The Large Nerdron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is podcast brilliant person Jonathan Strickland.
Hey, Ariel, I've got a question for you. My question to you is, you have the power to cast your beloved co-host in any role in any musical. What role do you cast me in which show?
The dude from Chess, because you like chess.
When you say the dude from chess, there are, I will have you know, multiple dudes in chess. Do you mean the one night in Bangkok dude? Do you mean
the,
okay, all right, you mean, yeah, gotcha, you mean the American, got it.
Bangkok, oriental setting in the city, don't know what the city is.
That is an acceptable answer, and I happily accept the role. I will start training now and start singing ABBA.
Or the lead dude in Music Man.
Never mind pumping any water till your parents are caught with a cistern empty on a Saturday night, and that's trouble. Yes, you got lots and lots of trouble. I'm thinking of the kids.
Okay, that's also excellent. I mean, I do like to tell people that they've got trouble right here in River City with a capital T that rhymes with P and that stands for pool.
Yes, that's kind of what we're talking about today.
Yeah. Would you like to know what I would cast you in?
Trouble. I do.
I would cast you as Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, I love that.
It's a good role.
It is a good role. That's on my bucket list. I was debating when you asked me giving you a silly answer, but then it would have given away something coming up later in the episodes.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of why I chose this question, is that it is foreshadowing, but you'll have to stick to the end to find out what the heck I shadowed for. We are entering into our first official first segment where we're going to talk about news. Now, however, transparency for you guys out there in listener land, we're recording this well before the show goes up. So rather than pick news that will be stale, we thought we would talk a little bit about trends that have happened, particularly over the pandemic.
And you know, stuff that we would have talked about, wanted to talk about prior to the launch of LNC version 2.
Yes. So the first part is, these are all the bummers, right? Like, the pandemic has hit everyone super hard, and that does not exclude the entertainment industry. The first thing I was going to bring up, and in fact it does lead right back from the musicals thing, is that live theater is essentially on hold right now, apart from some creative uses of like streaming media and some very limited performances, but by and large, live theater has been put on hold. Broadway is on hiatus at least until May of 2021.
But even worse than that, the Met Opera isn't even starting back till September 2021.
Yeah, I would actually be shocked if we see Broadway open in the spring right now. Most of the projections I see when it comes to vaccinations and herd immunity are pointing to this time next year.
But you know what? It's okay, because during this time, we've just got so much good TV out there that we can watch. A whole bunch of new shows happening.
Yeah, not that many new ones. Not that many returning ones either. Yeah, so this leads into our other part of talking about the bummers of COVID. And that would be that a lot of television series were affected by this, either going into a kind of limbo or postponing a season. Because obviously the risks of production were very high, especially early on when we still were learning about the transmission. Arguably, we're still learning about the transmission of COVID-19, but back in the beginning, no one was really sure under what situations it was particularly.
You could get it.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone was shutting down.
So, yeah. So, and a lot of the shows that shut down were in production.
Mm-hmm.
When yeah. they started.
So, yeah. So we saw things like shows like Stranger Things season 4 had just started production when the pandemic hit. I think they were in production for 2 weeks and then the pandemic shut them down. They had planned yeah. on being finished with their production by late August of 2020, and they didn't even get started again until late fall of this year. They are back in production, but obviously yeah. it's a much more controlled approach than what they were looking at when they were first starting in the early part of the year.
Yeah, the film industry has some pretty stringent COVID regulations going on right now. You know, they were lucky, and so were some other shows. Atlanta and Fargo were postponed due to the pandemic, but are mm-hmm. planned to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Some are not coming back. GLOW and Drunk History were both filming when the pandemic hit and then got canceled. And it was sad for GLOW, a dramedy about the old show, GLOW, about female wrestlers, mm-hmm. because it was their final season.
Yeah, the gorgeous ladies of wrestling will not get their final season because the budget just wasn't there to keep things kind of treading water indefinitely. And so the decision was made to pull the plug, which is a bummer, especially since that's a Netflix series. And mm-hmm. you see some of the stuff that Netflix greenlights and you start to wonder, because GLOW was one of those that got critical acclaim. It was popular and it had
yeah.
good critical response. There are some things that Netflix funds that you start to question, like who's actually paying stuff out. I mean, granted, a lot of those are probably much lower budget productions.
Yeah.
So they don't yeah. cost as much, but yeah, you
but
know.
It wasn't just filming. It wasn't just budgeting. It was also scheduling. So like Society was another Netflix show mm-hmm. that did really well. And I haven't watched it, but the trailer looked funny. They were doing really well, but when it came to trying to keep that show going through the pandemic, juggling exceptionally large casts, not just because of COVID, but with scheduling, with postponing the production, just took that one out of the water too.
Yeah, and some of these shows were already on the way to winding down, and now the question is, for some of them, when will we get to see their final seasons? And for others, there's still the scary question of will we see them, because there's always the chance that they'll come to a similar conclusion that we saw with GLOW. Mm-hmm. So like Supergirl, for example, was already heading into its final season.
Yeah. Yeah. Which in theory we're still getting.
Yeah.
Black Lightning got renewed, but now it's been said that this next season will be its final season as well. I don't know if that's COVID related though.
Right. But my point being that because of these production issues, although we are seeing a lot more shows going back to production, but because of these production issues, it worries me, because that uncertainty can play out by affecting the shows and making them conclude earlier than was originally planned.
Yeah. Although you've got a note here about the Stranger Things seasons 4 going back to that, because yeah. There was a little added benefit to postponing the filming of the show, which was that they were able to revise their script,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. So this was something that made me laugh. Apparently in every other season of Stranger Things, the creators of the show were still working on scripts when the early scripts for the season went into production. So episode 1 might be in production and they might still be working on episode 4, which means they don't really know where everything's going to lead, and they might come up with a great idea for episode 4, but they didn't really set it up in episode 1 because they hadn't thought of it yet. So the benefit of this was that because things got postponed, the brothers could end up working on the scripts for the entire season. They completed the season, then they were able to go back through and revise the earlier scripts and have them be more cohesive. So in a way, Calamity forced them to practice better writing approaches to their work. And that to me is interesting. I mean, there's some movies that I watched, and as I was watching them, I felt like I was watching a film that was probably still being written while they were shooting the film. And I later found out that was the case. The big one being Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, the very first one. As I was watching it, I was like, there's no way this was a full script before these. And I love that movie. Don't get me wrong. But I could tell.
Right.
Yeah, I was right. I was like, yeah, no, this story is meandering all over the place. It's clear that they didn't really know where they were going when they started shooting because the story wasn't finished yet. And the same thing was true with Stranger Things. But now we're going to get a season four that arguably is much stronger.
Which is good, because at the end of season three, I was like, where are they going to do with this?
Yeah.
That is a correct sentence in my mind.
But yeah, it hit so many of, it hit essentially every production, right? So
yeah, I remember at the beginning going, I'm waiting on these four shows for their new season. How many of them are far enough in their production schedule to still come out despite the fact that everything's shut down? Like Umbrella Academy.
Mm-hmm. For me, it was Doom Patrol. That is a series I did not expect to enjoy, and it made me fall in love with a street.
With a talking street.
With a talking street. It's so such a weird show. And, one of those where it's so weird that you feel like it's the kind of thing that if you breathe on it wrong, it's going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ariel, you and I, we've been fans of shows that were truly weird kind of genre shows that never stood a chance. And it's amazing they got as far as they did. Gallivant being a more recent example, right?
Great. Bring back Gallivant.
Great show. Great show. It felt like it could have gone one more season.
Yes.
Another one that I think of all the time, and this one really is a throwback, is The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., which was...
Oh, that was a great show.
So much fun. It suffered a little bit with the orb storyline, which I felt was too weird even for me. But again, one of those shows where you're like, these are people who are taking chances to bring very unusual stuff to TV. And they get like a passionate fan base. It may not be big enough to justify continuing it. But that's the kind of thing like that I think of with Doom Patrol, right? It's that kind of category of show. And then you get something like a Pandemic, which is obviously above and beyond the normal challenges these shows face. And you worry about what are its chances to survive?
Yeah, I mean, right now it's still slated to come back. And I'm glad that some of the shows that I'm very excited about, things like WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, are still slated to happen.
They might be delayed a little bit, but they are like Falcon and the Winter Soldier. That was one of the stories we had where they have gone back into production. And according to the Falcon, it's a miserable experience because he said he was in Prague and that all the food was delivered in Ziploc bags because it had to all be sanitary and safely handled. And he says it's just terrible. Yeah. And it just sounds like a very unpleasant experience.
There are a lot more hoops as a film actor you got to jump through to make a show right now.
Well, and I want to talk to you about that when we come back from our break, because as someone who has been dipping her toe in that industry, and has started to see how that works firsthand, I am curious to hear more about it. But we will save that after this quick break.
Hey, we're back.
Yep.
Exciting.
for us, we were here the whole time.
We were.
But Ariel, I do want to ask you. So as you mentioned in our episode zero, you are an actress. You audition for things and you are pursuing that while we have this new reality going on. So can you talk a little bit about things that you have observed or that you have learned of when it comes to productions in this pandemic world?
Yeah. So really what it comes down to is most productions, and I'll say this even on an indie level, because I've done some indie stuff I haven't been on a big set during the pandemic, but are really taking this seriously, because much like Broadway, much like all this, if you're an actor, if you're a person who works on a film set, this is your livelihood, and you're basically you've basically spent months not really making any art, not really making any money, mm-hmm. you know. And sure, if you're like an upper echelon actor, you're probably pretty comfy to weather it through. But you know,
that's like 1% of all actors, though. Like,
yeah, that's not many. You know, most people live on a regular paycheck, like the rest of us. But so they all want to be really careful. They don't want productions to shut down. So it's stuff like testing every 3 days if you're a series regular, mm-hmm. temperature checks before you get on set, working. And all of these are in a Get Back to Work guide that actually was released with some of the unions. And there's an article about it on Washington Post. So if you have more interest in all of that, you can look it up there. But temperature checks, like you said, with craft services, making sure that food is individually packaged and given to everybody, making sure that people are socially distancing whenever possible, working in different zones. So you'll have like different work groups of people, people who are on set every day of the week, people who are only on set for a couple of days, people who can work more regularly social distance, as opposed to actors who have to take their masks off, have to get closer together. And each of these different work groups have different regulations based on their risk level that they have to go through. So if you're not an actor, you have to wear a mask whenever you're within 6 feet of somebody. Actors, when they don't have to be acting, have to do the same. You know, making sure that if you have to do skin-on-skin contact, that you're wearing gloves. I'm sure in certain scenes of a show that may not happen. Mm-hmm. I've even heard, even though I don't, because I do more film acting, I don't really do extra work anymore. Extras are being pulled on for longer periods of time than maybe just an afternoon, because if you have to get tested, if you have to, you know, kind of self-quarantine and all this stuff and go through all the hoops to be on set, then they might want to use you for a couple more days to get a big chunk of filming out.
Right. Rather than have to keep repeating that whole process with a new batch of people over and over again.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But it's a lot, and it's a lot of testing. So it's not perfect. You know, there are certainly some instances where there's still COVID on sets, but not much. I think I read an article where on Tyler Perry, his COVID rates are well below Georgia's regular COVID rates, because of all of the precautions they're taking. So it's safer than going to the grocery store. To me, it feels like, and it kind of seems like too.
Well, and as you were saying, like, this is livelihood, right? So people are treating it very seriously, because if they don't, then their work is gone. In fact, if COVID does pop up on a set, depending on the person, I mean, you might be contact tracing to say, all right, well, who is this person near all the time? Is this something that is concerning enough where we need to shut down production for a couple of weeks and quarantine to make certain that no one else is sick? Like, that's a big deal. Yeah. And time really is money when it comes to producing TV and film and all that. So you got to make sure that everyone is safe, or else you're costing a studio potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars in downtime, and nobody wants to be responsible for that. So, no. I mean, it's encouraging to hear that there are all these protections in place. It is interesting because, you know, I feel very conflicted as a consumer, because I want to see this stuff, right? I want the content. I'm a fan of things, but I don't want anyone to get hurt or sick because of that. And meanwhile, people want to work. They have that desire to both be creative and to make a living off of it. Studios want to work because they want money. So everyone has these different motivations, some of which might feel less pure than others. Like, if you look at it from the studio perspective, the typical approach is, oh, those greedy producers. By the way, my official title is executive producer. Then you start to, you know, you can feel like weird about wanting to see stuff come back. But knowing that there are these protective measures in place, and that these are things that the various guilds have worked toward to make certain that the people they represent are protected. Makes me feel better about it, knowing that people are going to these lengths to try and protect each other and the art itself.
And those lengths, I'm sure, will change as we learn more about what's going on with the virus. I have been on a couple indie sets since the beginning of the pandemic, well spaced out, you know, making sure that myself and everybody else on very, very small crews, it's me and one other actor and then a couple of crew people is what it's been. And we've all quarantined prior, done it, and then
quarantined
afterwards
again
as well.
Yeah.
Again, like even at the indie level, it seems like everybody's taking it as safe as humanly possible, because you want everybody to be safe, first of all, and then you don't want that hanging over your product either. So you know, it's everybody's just trying to do the best they can, I suppose.
Well, and like I said, to me, it's actually kind of inspiring. It's because we're really looking otherwise at a pretty bleak future in the short term anyway for entertainment, because if we can't create those safe spaces and safe environments for creation, then we're going to have a really long dry spell.
Although I will say, like, after Umbrella Academy came out, prior to new seasons of things starting to come out now, I did use that time to catch up on a whole bunch of television that I had been like, I want to watch this show, but I don't have time.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice not to have that pressure of how am I going to fit all these TV shows in, because I love watching media.
Yeah. So finally having all that. And of course, we've seen people really gravitate toward various streaming services. And, you know, we even had some new stuff come out. Either it was already produced after the pandemic, you know, before the pandemic hit, rather, or it was something that finished up during the pandemic. There were some really creative approaches to that. One that I meant to mention, which is really odd, is that Blacklist did a really cool thing with theirs, where Blacklist was in season 7, which was, they were renewed for season 8, but they were still in production for their 2020 season when the pandemic hit, which to me was already unusual. A lot of television productions will be finished by then because they have to be so far ahead of the actual release schedule. But Blacklist was still filming when the pandemic hit and shut down production, but they needed to get their season finale done. And so what they ended up doing was they had the actors record lines out of their own homes, and then they hired an animation studio to animate the season finale, which to me is just like, that's putting a lot of faith in your audience, right? To completely switch to a different form of storytelling and hope that they come along with you on that journey. That's a big deal.
It is, you know, but people have been, it seems, really supportive of the way that not just television, but live events have had to pivot as well. For instance, Dragon Con.
Yes. So for those who do not know, Dragon Con is a science fiction, fantasy, horror fan convention. And it's the largest one in the Southeast. And it's out of here in Atlanta, Georgia. And it typically happens over Labor Day weekend. And it's huge, right? You get one of the running jokes about Dragon Con is that you never really know how many people attend on a weekend, because the estimates will range on the low end from around 30,000 to more than 100,000 from people who are crazy. Because I don't think there's any way there's that many. I mean, it feels it.
If you count the people who stop on the side of the road as they're going to pick up their Dunkin' Donuts to watch the parade, maybe.
Yeah, no, on a parade day, sure. So yeah, and Dragon Con is particularly known for things like the cosplay community. Like Comic Con is a much larger convention by number of people. However, Comic Con takes place in a convention center that closes at the end of the day. And maybe like, I'd say like one in five people at Comic-Con are in costume, maybe. At Dragon-Con, it feels like it's one out of every two. Like, half of the people are there in costume. And it all takes place in hotels, so it never shuts down. It's there 24 hours a day for like, now it feels like a week and a half because it technically starts on
it's
a Friday.
It's technically 4 days.
Yeah. It's technically Friday through Monday, but it's now for a while, Thursday was the new Friday and now Wednesday is the new Thursday. However, obviously this year that was all just not viable, right? You could not have a big convention in person. So they switched to an online streaming event version, and they put in so much work to get guests and to have panels and to still have an interactive experience online as best they could. And it was really exciting.
It was. It was interesting to me because we saw Comic-Con. We saw some other conventions also do these online programs. Mm-hmm. But Dragon Con kind of took it the extra step. They even did the parade. They even figured out a way to do parades and costume contests as a part. As we said, cosplay and that social aspect is such a huge part of that convention. They really figured out how to make that possible for the fans. And I've seen artists, you know, Dragon Con's a convention, but I've seen artists and other events do the same.
In the interest of full disclosure, Ariel has in the past worked at the con in various mm-hmm. departments, and I am the son of the first Toastmaster of Dragon Con, so we both have a long history with that convention. But neither of us, I think, were involved this year. We were just more like attendees than participants.
Yeah.
So it is good that we're still seeing that sense of community online, mm-hmm. even through the pandemic. And it's interesting because it's like seeing a weird cycle for me, because for the longest time when I was growing up, science fiction conventions, that was like the one time you could gather with other people who happened to like the same weird stuff you liked. And you could talk to them and you could share your crazy fan theory about, you know, whatever it was. And you could talk about, you listen to other people's crazy theories and then mash up your crazy theories. And you'd have these endless discussions about all sorts of fantasy and sci-fi and horror stuff. But that was the only place you could really go and do that because there wasn't an internet for the general mm-hmm. public at that point. Now we have the internet where we have all these different spaces. And so you hear my dog barking in the background. We have all these different spaces where we've got things like, you know, Reddit, or for the longest time we had Tumblr, although that's kind of died down now. Instagram, all these different
there.
Places.
It's still there.
Just not as crazy as it used to be. I mean, DashCon really took the wind out of their sails. But we've got these spaces online that really help out quite a bit. And it's interesting to see now that the place that used to be the central gathering point for geekdom has leaned so heavily on the internet, which in a large part has kind of democratized that experience so that you could have something similar. You could find your people more easily online than in the real world.
That is true. So, you know, I've really enjoyed talking about this. And normally we try to stay more on one topic during our conversation, but we kind of went over just to how much the pandemic has made people pivot and how they're trying to adapt to that. But it's time for another break. And then it's time for my favorite part of the show,
where we mash two things up. And yeah, let me tell you, folks, she's picked a doozy of a pairing.
Listen, I think it's pertinent because we're talking about the pandemic, and this mashup has both properties have stuff to do with masks.
Right, but let's not spoil it. We'll have everyone join us after the break, and then you'll find out what the heck she's talking about.
All right, everybody. So like I said, we are going to do our mashup now. So we kind of brought you down talking about all pandemic-y stuff, which everybody knows about, but we wanted to talk about it. So now we're going to bring you back up. So this week, we're taking two properties that have to do with masks, and mm-hmm. we are mashing them together. One of those is The Mandalorian, which is a show that made it through production craziness with the pandemic because we just got the second season that is currently airing. And the other, because we talked about Broadway being shut down and about the opera being shut down, is The Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, so I don't feel like we even need to talk about what these things are because I'm pretty sure everyone out there listening has heard of them. But just in case you haven't, The Mandalorian is a Star Wars property running on Disney Plus and follows a bounty hunter, a Mandalorian, similar to Boba Fett, but this takes place after the events of the original trilogy. And then Phantom of the Opera is a ridiculous, bombastic musical. The specific version we're talking about, I imagine, is the musical version. That's what you had in mind, right? Okay.
Yes, the musical version.
As opposed to like the original book or the, you know, Lon Chaney type movies.
Where a disfigured guy wears a mask and hides under the opera and falls in love with an opera star.
Yeah, and then she has Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, it brings up a whole nother conversation of ableism and things like that, but we'll get into that in a future episode. Regardless, I want to start.
Pitch. Yeah.
So it starts when our hero Mando, and that's not his real name, but I'm not going to spoil it for Jonathan because I don't know if he's watched the episode that far yet, has his helmet broken and in half in a bounty hunting duel. Disgraced per the code of his Mandalorian ways, Mando takes residence under the last place anyone would look for our stoic protagonist and accidentally catch a glimpse of his face, the local space opera house. He hides underneath it. But to his surprise, he loves the music and the drama of the space opera, and he starts watching the shows. However, from his little hidey-hole where he's watching the shows, because he can't just sit in the audience, people would see half his face. That cannot happen. He sees that strange things keep happening during the performances. Props will float off the stage when the performers aren't looking. Trap doors will open up under the singers. It's ruining the shows and it's making everybody in them really worried. Not wanting this art to be ruined, which has touched his damaged soul and his damaged helmet, he explores the opera, space opera one night, and that's when he sees it. The child ransacking the leftover refreshment table, levitating the food to its mouth. The child, too cute to kill but too dangerous to let roam around the space opera, is lured by Mando into the wings of the opera with him, where he stuffs the child in his pouch to become the caretaker of the child and by extension the caretaker of the opera. The performers never know why this strange occurrence has stopped, but there are whispers of a half-masked man hiding and lurking in the dark crevices just out of sight of the space opera. And if you listen carefully when the curtain is closed, you can sometimes hear the soft refrains and the curtains rustling. The child of the force is here inside this pouch.
Well done. Well
done. Thank you. The music bit, I'll shout out to my friend Sarah, who came up with that. Not all of it, just the music bit.
Okay, so it's my turn to pitch?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The curtain rises, and we see an auction going on. There's the current item that is being auctioned off is a broken water evaporator. And as soon as that auction has cleared, they talk about the magnificent chandelier made from real IG-11. Yes, it's a chandelier made out of a broken robot that then rises up majestically to the ceiling of the theater house that you are in, because this is a stage show I'm talking about here. And it all lights up and everything's brilliant. And so we essentially see the story of the Phantom of the Opera playing out, but with very particular lyrics. So here's my pitch for just two of the songs, okay? So one of them starts off this way. On desert sands he came to fix the broken. Kuil was his name. I have spoken. See? So got it? So yeah,
it's
going to be all about him because Ugnaughts do not get enough love. So there's going to be just a whole number about Ugnaughts. But later, we get the real heart-wrenching number. Ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Tiny Yoda pop culture sensation, merchandise across all of creation. Now, I'm not going to sing the sex part because I cannot even hit the high notes, but the frog lady of him would beg, please do not eat my egg. But the child still gobbled up one in a bite, and cancel culture hit Yoda that night.
Spoiler. You haven't even watched that episode, have you?
No, I haven't gotten that far, but everyone talked about Yoda eating an egg, so I knew about that part.
Okay. So, well, you touched my soul. There's no way to avoid it.
Yeah, I got a note about that. I'm told that I have a restraining order now for musicals, which is fair. I didn't warm up, didn't have music accompaniment. Those were my
it was,
also, and I'm a character voice actor, so.
It was beautiful. Look, stop making excuses. It was beautiful. I would option that musical in a heartbeat.
Now, I like to go meta with my musicals, which is why I had to comment on the merchandising, which honestly, like, the two things I've seen the most about this coming season or this current season are the stories about merchandise and all the Baby Yoda merchandise that you can get, including mm-hmm. like the little animated Baby Yoda robotic figure. Mm-hmm. And then the storyline within the show about Yoda eating an egg from a near extinct species, and that there was a big reaction to that. And I just haven't sat down to watch the full season. Like I started season one with my wife, and we loved it. We thought it was such a cool take on the Star Wars mythology to make it kind of a Western. But it was one of those things where we didn't carve out enough time to watch all of season one, and then other stuff started piling up. So we need to, as we're recording this, we're actually about to go into a holiday. So I'm hoping that I can have some time to catch up on stuff, because that's definitely one of the things.
Because then we can have a huge conversation about that egg thing. Because I tell you, I went back and forth in my brain about it a few times.
Yeah, the stuff I've seen has been interesting as well. Because I even read up a little bit about it. Because at that point, I'm like, well, it's already been spoiled for me. I can't unknow that. So I do want to know the context, but it's going to take me a while to get there. So I'll go ahead and read up on it. Yeah. But yeah, to me, The Mandalorian is one of those Star Wars properties that just felt really, really good. Like it felt like Star Wars, but in a new way. And I'm one of those grouchy old guys who's like, I didn't like the prequels. I don't fault people who do. And I'm not crazy about the sequels either. And in fact, if I'm being totally honest, I haven't seen the last film I haven't seen The Rise of Skywalker. I just haven't seen it.
But that's okay. You like Mandalorian. A lot of people who have issues with some of those other properties do too. So catch up, and then we'll talk about it on Large Nerd Drunk Collider.
That sounds good. So yeah, that was a fun one. We promise that they won't all be musicals. We do love musicals.
Yeah. Well, we can't promise that they won't be all musicals. We're not planning for them all to be musicals right now, but
yeah, no, we care about you too much, dear listener, but we do welcome you guys to reach out to us. Well, I'm talking about my voice, not yours, Ariel.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, we welcome you to reach out to us and to share with us your thoughts on what a Mandalorian Phantom of the Opera mashup would be like, or suggest other properties we should mash together.
Yeah.
And as well as, you know, any other kind of geek topics that you think we should really research and talk about, you know, stuff that matters to the geek sphere.
Yeah, you can reach out to us currently on social media on Twitter at LNC_podcast, or on the Facebooks or on Instagram. You can send us a message. You can send us a DM and we'll check that. And if we like your suggestions or your stories or your mashups, we might even read them online. So,
yeah. All right. On the show, not just on online.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
No, that's fine. Like, listen, we're both recording this after a very long day. So it's amazing.
We are both online right now. Technically, we'll be reading them online, but yes, we'll read them on the show if we like.
Yeah, that's That's very fair. So, yeah, welcome to our madness. We look forward to covering lots more geeky things, and we'll be covering, you know, current news very soon. By the time you listen to the episodes that we'll start to publish starting next week, you will hear more current headlines. And until then, I am still Jonathan Strickland.
And I am, and always will be, Ariel Kasten. Bye.
I have spoken.
The Large Neutron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Kasten.
Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.